is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
John Foster Dulles published a book in 1950 when he was appointed senator from New York. He would lose in the general election in November of 1950 and later on become the very prominent Secretary of State for Dwight David Eisenhower's two terms. But in 1950, he published a book meaning to give him credentials for foreign policy. Chapter 19, The Role of the Military, he writes in the opening paragraph something that resonates today. When the world thermometer reads, not war, not peace, it is hard to decide whether to follow military judgments or political judgments. I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. Before that, in Hong Kong for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, to observe the quandary now for foreign policy conducted in two wars in Asia, maybe three, and another threatened in East Asia all the time. Policy now following the demonstration by the president of his struggles in office to maintain what is accepted as fit before the American people, the polling indicating that the American people, Democrats, Republicans, independent, want the president to move on and retire after one term. Mary, a very good evening to you. John Foster Dulles, not war, not peace. Your measure of the president's demonstration on Thursday night of his struggles, what does that mean for our adversaries and our allies? Can we generalize at this moment with those two wars active and the third war threatened? Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening to you, John. Always nice to be with you. I think it's important to note that the president's problems with his memory and his physical frailty weren't just on display on Thursday, but it's something that the American people have been witnessing over a period of many, many months. And it's concerning, and I think that's why you see overwhelming majorities of Americans concerned about the president's age and ability to run for re-election. And it's very dangerous because our enemies see his condition and look at his actions over the past 3 years now and see a man whose instinct is usually to prioritize a dialogue over action, and someone who has tolerated the breaking of norms by our enemies repeatedly, whether it's his reaction to Russia when he came into office and greenlighting the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, where it was clear that Russia was not improving its behavior in any way. It was just a giveaway to Moscow, and Moscow rewarded him by invading Ukraine. Whether it was his outreach to China, which has been rewarded with increased aggression in that part of the world, whether it was his attempt to restart the nuclear talks with Iran and to pay cash for American hostages, which was rewarded by Iran-backed Hamas's invasion and terrorism of Israel and the deaths of more than 1,000 people. The president's condition is extremely important, and it's tracked extremely closely by our enemies. Whether it's watching news reports or when he travels abroad, they observe him and try to observe and glean information from his advisors. So I think it's deeply concerning from a national security point of view. That being said, there are some experienced people around him. Jake Sullivan, who served in the Obama White House as national security advisor, or Kurt Campbell, who's now Deputy Secretary of State, who had an important position in the State Department vis-a-vis Asia, who's an assistant secretary under Obama, focused on Asia. But they, too, have the same instincts as the president. So even though they're able-bodied, they have adopted the same approach to our enemies. So there's no indication that there's been any learning from their mistakes, that they're interested in toughening up their policies and restoring U.S. deterrence. And that makes this all combined a very dangerous moment for the United States and our free world friends and allies around the world.
Simultaneously, concerns in Europe, worldwide, about intemperate remarks made by the candidate for the Republican nomination, former President Trump, having to do with NATO. I don't need to read the quotes other than to say the opinion is the speaker was not well informed about how NATO works. Still, the U.S. leads NATO. NATO is a construction of the U.S. national security policy, providing security for our allies, and very successful to win the first Cold War. The question is, what is NATO's future in the event of a Republican victory if Mr. Trump is the nominee? Not war, not peace. What can you say, Mary, about how you heard former President Trump's remarks and how Europe heard about it?
Well, I may hear it a little bit differently because I served in the Trump administration. And what the former president was referring to was a conversation he had with an unspecified European leader about the fact that this leader was not meeting his or her commitments to NATO. And essentially, President Trump threatened him and said, well, if you don't pay, why should we protect you? Which, while that may be offensive to the Europeans and to a lot of foreign policy elites, it's, I think, to the ear of many Americans, a very reasonable thing to say. It's not a conventional thing to say, but it is a fact that under the Trump years, Europe did start to contribute more to NATO. And now, because of Putin's second invasion of Ukraine, brutal invasion, you have seen even more nations up their contributions, not because of anything that Trump did, but because the threat is so real now. It's up against their borders. Now, a couple other notes about President Trump's record with NATO. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had a terrific relationship with the NATO Secretary General. We went to Brussels many times. It was a very well-functioning relationship. Kay Billy Hutchison, formerly of Texas, was our NATO ambassador. She was there for many years, very competent and productive. We rallied unanimous support at NATO for the withdrawal from a missile defense treaty that we had had with Russia. We achieved unanimous NATO support. That never gets mentioned in the discussion of Trump with NATO. And I think that there was a renewed seriousness about the function of the alliance. I'll give you another example. We tried to move U.S. troops out of Germany and toward the eastern border of NATO into Poland. And there was a revolt among the foreign policy elites and the Europeans. How could we possibly remove troops from Germany? Well, it's been many decades since World War II, and the threat has migrated. The former Soviet Union is no more, and the threat emanated from Moscow. And so, indeed, we do need to take troops out of Germany and move them eastward. And that was something that I think would have been a renewed push had President Trump won a second term. And it's a very practical and reasonable thing. If we hated NATO and didn't want it, we would never have lobbied our allies to contribute more, nor would we have gone through the extensive planning to redistribute troops for NATO's defense. So, I find the debate about this unnuanced. I think it lacks evidence from what we did rather than what the president said. And I think it's very reasonable to ask our allies to contribute more. Is it scary for the Europeans to suggest that the United States might not be there? Yes. Could Vladimir Putin interpret that as U.S. weakness? Yes, he could. But there's a fine balance here between waking up our allies and threatening the alliance. And I don't think we've tipped over into the latter. I think it was a Trump move to emphasize that he's looking out for the American pocketbook. And that's actually a domestic campaign issue more than it is an issue of NATO.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. We're going to turn to Ukraine and to China. I'm John Battle.